If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
I'll be shocked if you see Stamat, Barlow, or Coleman. And if you do, then you're saying we're going for the win, and then I say, all right, let's back up to why you did what you did the night before. So, listen, it's a balancing act. Expect the bullpen to be. And so this is one of the things, listen, when we get the betting on baseball up, this is one of the things you need to be watching. If you're going to bet the baseball, particularly in today's game where the bullpen is now routinely getting you at least four of the innings, then you better know what's available. The chambers, there's a couple empty chambers tonight for the Royals in this game. You better really like the pitching matchup from a starter standpoint. And the matchup tonight for the Royals and the Angels features one Shohei Ohtani against Daniel Lynch. Ohtani minus 242.
How about the fact that the guy, you know, ate ribs last night? He's going on the mound tonight. And then they told a fun story last night on the telecast that, or maybe I heard it on a clip earlier today, that they were asking the manager, "Hey, we make sure they were going out on a road trip. Do we get tomorrow's starter leaving early?" And the guy goes, "Tomorrow's starter's in the on deck circle. Yeah. We can't get him out of town the early time. He's a unicorn. He's unlike anybody this game has seen since Ruth."
I will say this: I would never lay 242. I don't ever play the big favorites. If I did, it would be part of some parlay where it's just one leg to try to jack up the amounts. But I think Daniel Lynch at plus 200 is kind of crafty. I mean, the Angels are scuttling.
Yep. He's going to strike guys out.
The Royals have won 5 out of 6. Lynch is finding himself. The money value in this game is on Lynch plus 201.
Yes.
Now, again, I want you to if you go bet him and you don't win, you got to find that same opportunity where he's about plus 200 and bet it again, and then bet it again, because you're only supposed to win it 1 out of 3. But if you can find your time and take it 2 out of 4, you've made money, right? Because you've wagered, 400, you 100 four times, and you've won 200 twice.
Right.
Plus got your 100 back. So you've made $200 if you can do that. That's how you bet baseball. But the Royals bullpen is thin. Daniel Lynch hasn't gone deep. That's the scary part, and you're going to get the softer part of the Royals' bullpen that's going to come into this game. So if the Royals are going to win it, Ohtani better be tuckered out from hitting those home runs the night before. That's going to be one of the key parts for them to get it done. One more for Mike Matheny, who said he thinks last night was the kind of win that can help his team down the road.
You use a whole roster today, every eligible guy ended up doing something to help us today, and just the energy and the fight, they just kept punching. I mean, they just, you'd take one and they kept coming back. That's what I love to see, is what I've always believed to be a significant part of this club, as far as the core group of guys. That's just kind of in their DNA, and to see a game like that, that's one that it begins to repeat itself over time.
I do think it's a pretty big win. I mean, getting a toe-to-toe win against big stars, looking like you've blown it. Oh, here we go again, and still finding a way to win. I agree with them. I think this is one time that's not hyperbole from the manager.
Yeah, and I think it is. You kind of mentioned the elements that I'm referring to here. A back and forth game where you win a game like that. If that thing had been nip and tuck the entire night, and you win that thing, that's one thing. But it isn't just winning dramatically. It's that you didn't crap it away. Because that's kind of what it felt like toward the end. When it went from 6-1 and they up 10-7 and then it was tied again, that just felt every bit like a loss, particularly when the Royals didn't score with the runner at second, nobody out, or in the top of the 10th. And the Angels looked like they were going to win it right away, and they pitched out of that to not lose a game you had a big lead in and win in dramatic fashion on the road against a good team. All those things make that a very good win, even for a team who's in somewhat rebuild mode.
Yeah, Salvador Perez did leave the game ultimately with a thumb injury, so we keep an eye on that moving forward. I think also the Matsui 8 RBIs is the most ever by a Japanese-born player. 6 by Hideki Matsui and Tadahito Iguchi was the record before now. That was an historic game in a lot of ways, and Bobby Witt Jr. outshone them all. That is a not necessarily statistically. I know 3-for-4, 2 runs, and 8 RBIs. From a game score standpoint, Ohtani had the biggest day, but Bobby Witt Jr.'s team won. He had 3 hits, 2 homers, and a double, and a star is born. He's been red hot coming into now, and he's hot going out. By the way, Carlos Santana continues to hit to the chagrin of some, but if you're going to get him traded, 4-for-5, 2 runs, and 5 RBIs, now up to a 347 on base, a 333 slug in his last 13. 381 batting average, 509 on base, and a 595 slug. He's always been a streaky player. We'll see how long he can stay hot for your Kansas City Royals. That is a big one. Tonight, as we mentioned, the Royals, a big dog, minus 245 for Ohtani, about plus 200 for the Royals. Lynch versus Ohtani tonight. Also, by the way, happening tonight, a little U.S. Open Cup quarterfinal, Sporting Kansas City versus Union Omaha at 7:30. I asked Peter Vermes yesterday if this was a must-win. He said, I will stop short of calling anything a must-win that's not a finals. But when Sacramento has already upended the L.A. Galaxy and you get a chance to play in, what is this, MLS 1, I think this league is that they're in. I think they're Omaha's 2 down from MLS. That's what I think I heard Nate say.
Oh, wow. More than I thought.
Win there and then host Sacramento, another minor league club, to put it into American baseball terms. You've got a gold brick road to the finals.
Yes.
Right?
Like I jokingly said they got the KU basketball treatment. They got a bunch of 10 seats. And someone goes, oh, be nice. But, yes, this highlights. It's one thing to be playing a team that you are a huge favorite against, but when you've had one of those teams just like you removed from your path, I can't imagine they're going to come flat tonight, would you? Particularly after what happened to the Galaxy. Hey, can you have a better teaching moment? Guys, you see what happened last night?
Unless you're like me, who already had them in the next round right. yesterday, and their mindset is the same, and now they're already in the finals in their mind. Because that's kind of where I've got them. So they got to go play. You can catch that one on ESPN Plus if you want to see it tonight at 7:30.
Well, the Royals lineup is out, and Salvador Perez is not in it.
You can also, if you're going to be on the road to Wichita and back in one night, like some of us, you can catch it on Sports Radio 810 WHB at 7:30. Final whistle, 9:30. I will be listening. So let's have a decent call for once, Bucati. And none of this impartial crap like I heard the other night on Fox.
By the way,
pure homerism.
Real quick, because there was some doubt or confusion, we weren't 100% sure. They're going for what would be their 5th U.S. Open Cup championship. They won 3 with Vermes as Sporting Kansas City. And then as the Wizards, they got one in 04.
What do we call that, Curtis?
When
you're going for your 5th?
Fifth.
Mm-hmm.
They're going for their 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th.
That's right.
Anything you say, 5th.
We win the 5th.
Going to paint the wall. Paint that wall, as they say.
Which number are they painting it with?
5th.
That will never
never
not
gets old
be funny.
For me. Never gets old for me. Not at all. A little bit of golf news. By the way, we're going to talk some golf coming up here shortly. Bob Herrig is going to join us. SI golf writer, also author of the new book, Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. Tiger and Phil.
He is as good a golf writer as there is.
He's really good, yeah. And we talk a lot.
SI didn't employ any scrubs.
No.
Yeah. Work for them.
Work for ESPN before that.
Yes.
We talk a lot about this LIV tour earlier in the Todd Lebo hour number 2, if you missed it on the podcast. But we get it, my plan is to talk a lot about that as well, because I think it's the biggest story in sports right now.
Yep.
I mean, it's huge what's going on right now in golf. And by the way, players involved in the LIV Golf Invitational Series will be allowed to compete at the Open Championship at St. Andrews next month, the 150th. Didn't realize it's a – does that have a name? 75% bicentennial?
No, let me see. I don't know if that has a – anniversary name.
Centennial and a half?
There you go.
It's called the Sesquicentennial.
Sesquicentennial. So they will be able to play in that as well. We will have more on that. But today, Jay Monahan, who is the PGA Tour commissioner, was very frank in his comments about the LIV Tour at a press conference here this afternoon.
Let me be clear. I am not naive. If this is an arms race, and if the only weapons here are dollar bills, the PGA Tour can't compete. The PGA Tour, an American institution, can't compete with a foreign monarchy that is spending billions of dollars in an attempt to buy the game of golf. We welcome good, healthy competition. The LIV Saudi Golf League is not that. It's an irrational threat, one not concerned with the return on investment or true growth of the game. Currently, no one organization owns or dominates the game of golf. Instead, the various entities, be it Augusta National or the USGA or the LPGA or the PGA Tour or the PGA of America, work together to meet our own respective priorities, but with the best interests of the game overall at heart. But when someone attempts to buy the sport, dismantle the institutions that are intrinsically invested in its growth, and focus only on a personal priority, that partnership evaporates. And instead, we end up with one person, one entity, using endless amounts of money to direct employees, not members or partners, toward their personal goal, which may or may not change tomorrow or the next day. I doubt that's the vision any of us have for the game.
You know, I'll say again what I said earlier. Nobody has any problem with money until they don't have it.
Yeah.
And then the person who's got it is wrong. They've lost their integrity. So I understand Saudi Arabia is not nice people. I got it. But if you answer a phone in this country, you're dealing with not nice people. Okay? The global economy, you know, take a look at China's record. And just about everything you pick up or do anything with has something in it that came from China. So
when
tires you drive on?
Yeah.
I mean, look at the history of those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I heard that, the first thing I thought of was him saying, "You can't run the world. That's our job."
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
I'm sure I'm missing a detail, but that's exactly how that minute and a half sounded to me. You're honing in on our action.
Mm-hmm.
Or horning in on our action.
Couple of notes from the NFL. Ravens outside linebacker Jalen Ferguson has died at the age of 26. At approximately 11:25 last night, Baltimore police said they responded to a home in the northern district of the city where they found Ferguson unresponsive and being treated by medics. Ferguson never regained consciousness, was pronounced dead on the scene, according to police. Also, former Raven Tony Siragusa, the NFL defensive tackle, became one of the biggest personalities out there, very popular, and a member of the Ravens championship team in 2000, died today at the age of 55.
A rough day for
Baltimore.
Ravens flock.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Roger Goodell says he has no authority to remove Daniel Snyder as the owner of the Washington Commanders. He said this morning at a congressional hearing that is ongoing about the workplace culture and accusations of sexual harassment in the Commanders organization. Snyder was invited to testify but declined. He said it oversees business commitments. Carolyn Maloney, chair of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, announced during the hearing that she plans to issue a subpoena to compel him to testify. At that point, if he doesn't come, he will be arrested.
Yep.
And if he skates the country, would that be enough to get him voted out by the owners? What do we think?
25%.
25%?
I talked about this with Curtis earlier. We talked about, does he have a handful of owners that he knows something about? What if he knows something about how long the league kept concussion information silent?
That, I think there's all kinds of stuff. I think they're very worried about it. They know he's a loose cannon. They recognized right after they let him into the club, and they made it harder to get into the club right after they did. Immediately after Daniel Snyder buying the football team, they figured out real fast he's a jackass, and they came up with all kinds of new rules to make it tougher to get into the club.
We don't want another one of those.
I mean, he basically bought the team for, like, nothing. He financed the whole deal, has railroaded his partners out of it. I mean, by all accounts, is a very bad guy.
No.
You know, this is a guy who told his defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, listen, your defense is too vanilla. You know, change it up. Let's go. Let's attack. Next game, team loses. Mike Nolan comes into the office the next morning at 6 a.m. There was an entire, like, you know, when you go to the ice cream shop and they got that, like, I don't know, 10-gallon bucket of ice cream. There was a chocolate bucket of ice cream that had melted completely and run all over his desk, and a note that said, "I told you I don't like vanilla." Now, yeah. You think that's funny and like, these coaches are paid a lot of money. Okay, tell me how you'd like it.
No,
walking that in and seeing your desk completely covered in melted ice cream.
That ain't funny.
That's where it starts with this jackass.
Yeah, that alone would be enough to get him on my bad side. But everything that's happened since then. I mean, I can't think of anybody who's more detestable from an ownership standpoint in professional sports.
Yeah, I can't either. All right, let's take a break. We're going to talk some golf with the guy who covers it. Bob Herrig is all over this LIV story for Sports Illustrated. He's coming up next here in the program.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk a little golf here in the 5 o'clock hour. Big news. In fact, the biggest story in sports is going on right here in the world of golf. Let's talk to a man who's very busy. He joins us here in the program from Sports Illustrated. He's also the author of the new book, Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. He's with us here in the program, Bob Herrig. Bob, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the time. And let's start with the book. Obviously, two of the best golfers, Tiger arguably the best golfer of all time, and a pretty big rivalry. I was reading through some of the passages, and you know, it is what it seems by reading your the passages in the book, more entertaining than what we think, even this relationship between the two of them.
Yeah, you know, I think I was sort of trying to capture the ins and outs and the intersections of their careers. And these guys were the top two, basically for 25 years. I mean, sure, they had others that came along and had their moments, but these guys sort of withstood it all. And along the way, there was a good bit of friction between them at times. There was some frostiness. There was some pettiness, I'd say, you know, childishness even. You know, there's some stories of just, you know, they just didn't really get along. They saw each other as adversaries. While it wasn't egregious in any way, they just weren't buddies, you know. And I guess we should probably expect that from two of the top, you know, people going at it in their craft. And so in any case, you know, they were completely different too. They were, you know, Phil's left-handed, very aggressive, bold. Took chances. Tiger right-handed, far more conservative, plodding along, so they weren't exactly the same type of personality either. So I tried to weave all that together through their careers, and you know, the bottom line conclusion obviously is that these guys were great, each of them in their own way.
Is this just the reality when two uber competitors get around each other and are forced to, you know, by not like by outside forces, but just when their business forces them to be around, eventually there are going to be conflicts?
I think partly. I mean, Tiger was kind of that way with anybody who he deemed a threat, you know, a rival, so to speak. You know, he was going to keep them at arm's length. It wasn't his nature, especially when he was in his 20s and early 30s, to embrace the guys he had to beat. I mean, we see a lot more of that today. There's a lot of young players today who are very, very friendly off the course, and then they have to flip the switch inside the ropes. Tiger wasn't really willing to do that. Phil was far more willing, and Phil was always very complimentary of Tiger. You know, he very much appreciated what he did for the game. He noted that Tiger, helped make him get better. He felt, maybe my career would have been better if there had been no Tiger, but maybe I wouldn't have gotten as good because he forced me to get better. So Phil was a little bit more gracious towards Tiger. This was certainly in the early days. They both kind of mellowed as they got a little bit older, and they were more conciliatory. They were more, they were friendlier toward each other. They were actually even, they were collaborative during the 2015, 16 to 18 timeframe with the Ryder Cup. And that was after Tiger, got a lot of perspective. He had been injured and hurt a lot. And I think he started to see the big picture a little bit more. And some of those things that seemed important earlier were no longer so much.
Yeah, and maybe saw that he wasn't all of golf, right? There was a bit of a reality check, all the off the course stuff that he had been through. He started to realize he's a human being, right?
No doubt. There was some maturity too. Mm-hmm. There was perspective that, life had changed. He felt lucky to be playing again. He was tired of the U.S. losing the Ryder Cup, and he saw, joining forces with Phil, even behind the scenes, was a better outcome than fighting him, And so they became, they became on the same team for once. And, even I have a whole chapter on the first time they ever played as partners in the Ryder Cup in 2004. And that kind of sets the stage for their attention. That was in retrospect, it was a mistake to put them together. They were oil and water. They did not make for a good team. They had a hard time just being teammates in that way. And, it backfired dramatically, kind of showed the tension between them at that point in their careers.
We're talking to Bob Herrick, SI Golf Writer, author of the new book, Tiger and Phil, Golf's Most Fascinating Rivalry. You mentioned Phil, saying that, Tiger's been good for the game, acknowledging that part of it. I usually take that to mean Tiger helped make us more money, right? Which is what most people would kind of describe that as. Now we've got a new force, and Phil Mickelson is at the center of that, and that's the LIV Tour. It's what's the future of this tour in your mind? Because when you see guys that are like, to quote Rory McIlroy, past their prime, grabbing a big payday, somewhat on their way out the door, it makes sense. But when you're getting guys that not long ago were racking up majors like Brooks Koepka and younger guys like, Bryson DeChambeau making a jump to the tour, what's the future of this tour, and what's the future of the PGA Tour?
I think these are all questions that we have to watch play out. I mean, the Liv Tour will go as long as they are patient and want it to go, because they basically have an endless supply of money. They don't need it to be commercially successful anytime soon, if ever. And so if they're willing to play this out, then I think they will be around. Now, how viable will they be? At some point, I think their tour needs to get world ranking points. That's something that won't happen anytime soon. So guys are going to play over there and not be able to earn points. The PGA Tour people are suspended from playing the PGA Tour. So eventually these highly ranked guys are going to slip in the rankings, and become not eligible for some of the biggest tournaments. So if they care about playing in the majors, they've got a dilemma. Now, obviously a guy like Koepka, he won the PGA Championship and the U.S. Open. His last major win was 19. So he's got a 5-year exemption from that win into the Masters and into the Open. He's got 10 years from 2018 for the U.S. Open. So he's fine there. And unless they change the rules, which would be crazy if you ask me. A guy who qualified should be able to play. And obviously the PGA is lifetime. So two of the four majors, he's okay. But the other two, at some point, he's 19th in the world. It doesn't take that long to start dropping if you're not earning any points. So then what? Does he try to play like the Asian Tour, which the Live Tour is sanctioned by, to try to earn points? I mean, it's that part of it to me is what will decide how viable this can be. As far as the PGA Tour, I think they're going to be fine. You know, I think one way they should look at it is this opens up spots for people to move up. You know, it's very competitive to get out there. And now this is an opportunity for some people. You've basically got 20-some guys who've given up their membership or who are being suspended. Okay, now there's an opportunity for 20. Maybe it helps them develop another star or two who are younger. And they're making announcements, too, to enhance their situation. That they're going to go to a calendar year schedule here starting in 2024, which, frankly, they probably should have never gotten away from. You know, I think it's a lot easier to follow when you know that the season starts in January and it's going to end in August or September. You know, the way it is now, it ends in August or early September and starts 2 weeks later. You know, it's just impossible to stay engaged that long. So, they're doing some things, too, to try to enhance their product. I don't think they're going to be in trouble. But in the short term, sure, it hurts. I mean, Koepka and DeChambeau were a huge story in golf last year. You know, it was one of the biggest storylines we had going with their spat. You know, their angst amongst each other. And now they're not going to be playing in PGA Tour events. So that's not something to just dismiss. You know, no Phil, no Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, even Pat Perez. I mean, there's some names there that people enjoyed following who won't be there.
Yeah, and now that any drama or the soap opera or just the rivalry that is Koepka versus DeChambeau happens someplace else and will garner those headlines for a different tour. And I was reading what you've written at SI about this, and it was news to me that, you know, I've had some people say, hey, look, they're increasing the purses in the PGA, trying to come up with more money at the end of the year and to create more emphasis on, you know, winning the season championship. And people have pointed to that. People, my friends of mine that are big golf fans, saying, see, they have lots more money and this is what the players are upset about and they're not spending it. You gave me some perspective there. That goes hand in hand with the new television deal that increased the revenues. So that makes sense. And you pointed out that, hey, this has been on the books really since February. So that's not new. But are the complaints, you know, Phil said, hey, I'm doing this, you know, I think it's for the PGA. The PGA needs to be better. There's a lot of things that they need to be doing for us. Do the players that are leaving have legitimate beefs with the PGA? And has the PGA been a monopoly that wasn't really doing what's best for its member players?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. I mean, Phil's message got lost in some of the bombastity. You know, to refer to the PGA Tour's obnoxious greed, that sort of overshadowed anything that he was trying to say that might have had merit. I mean, I think the issue is there's transparency problems. They're not, everything isn't shared. They're all of a sudden they're coming up with more money. Now, some of it has to do with the fact that they have a better TV deal and their revenues were going to increase. Some of it might just be that they were sitting on a chunk of cash and we're holding it back. And, you know, there's an argument to be made by the players. I mean, certainly in any line of work, you question sometimes, you know, who you're working with or for and wonder why things are done the way they are. We got to this point probably and in part because the tour was slow to react. You know, they've put out a great product. They do a lot of great things. The FedEx Cup is amazing. The winner of that thing is going to get $18 million this year. But it still is based on performance. And what the players have come to learn and what's been whispered in their ears by agents and others who have been trying to start these rival entities is that there should be some guaranteed money. You shouldn't have to earn everything. And you fight in any entertainment venue. You know, actors, for example, you know, they don't wait till the end of the movie to see how much they get paid. You know, they're getting a guaranteed amount. In all other team sports, guys are paid a guaranteed amount. Obviously, it's based on what they're predicted to do and what they have done, but it's also how much value they bring. They know that those people are going to put fans in seats, people in front of TV, sell luxury suites. And so, you know, in golf, you know, Tiger's the greatest example of this. Who's brought more to the sport than him? You know, he almost single-handedly helped them, you know, make their TV deals astronomical. He, you know, he sells out events he plays and he makes TV ratings skyrocket. But when he tees off on Thursday at a tournament, he isn't guaranteed anything. You know, if he doesn't beat the 100th guy in the rankings who brings no ticket sales to the event, he doesn't get paid. You know, so there is some truth to what the players say in that regard. What the tour is doing is it looks like they're going to put on a bunch of no-cut events. So that is guaranteed money. But you still have to perform for it. And you still have to qualify for those events. So it's not the same as what LIV is doing. And let's be honest, nobody can compete with what's gone on here recently. LIV has had to overpay to get it to this point. And that's where we are right now. You know, we've got this fight for talent, and LIV is willing to pay exorbitant sums to get it.
Well, we see, I thought I read something about the different tours, you know, buying up other tours. Is that the next move for LIV, is not only to, trying to grab the biggest names that they can, but also to start, you know, monopolizing other tours around the world?
You know, they already have an association with the Asian Tour. There's been some rumblings about partnering with the European Tour, which now it's called the DP World Tour. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. You know, certainly an avenue for their players to play on other tours would be desirable so that they can earn world ranking points while the LIV Tour isn't getting any. Whether or not that happens remains to be seen. You know, the PGA Tour and the European Tour have an alliance. They have this working alliance. They have a couple events this year that count on both tours, and the PGA Tour gave them some money. They bought a stake in their TV production unit. So I'm not sure if that could even work with the LIV Tour, which the PGA Tour views as hostile. It's going to be really interesting to see what all plays out here.
We're talking to Bob Herrick from SI, covers golf. His new book is a great read for anyone, and be a great gift for anyone that you've got that's got a birthday coming up. That's a golf fan, Tiger and Phil, golf's most fascinating rivalry. Bob, let me give you my final four quickies brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Just a word or two. Tell me the first thing that pops into your mouth. Tell me, what's your favorite course? I'll take Augusta out because I think that's an easy one for a lot of fans to go to. What's your favorite course?
The old course, St. Andrews.
Okay. Very good. What's your best round?
76. Many moons ago.
Yeah, not bad. What's your best club?
Oh, boy. I would say my 7-iron. Okay. I just like to hit the 7-iron.
Okay, that's interesting. And finally, does Tiger win another major?
Unfortunately, no. I don't think he does. I think it's going to be too difficult to pull that off.
Yeah, I agree. But if he does it, he will have shocked us all again. Bob, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it. Thanks for the insights, and hopefully we get a chance to talk to you on down the road.
Sounds great. I appreciate the time today. Thank you.
But first, to Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer, Shohei Ohtani, fifth player to drive in 8 runs in a game that his team lost. I asked for any of the other 4.
No idea. I wouldn't even know where to begin on that one.
Yeah, that's not one you can really put any kind of logic to. One of them was Jason Bay back in 2003.
Okay, Pirate.
Mike Epstein for the Washington Senators in 1970. We'll later go on to be the A's. Lee Thomas of the Los Angeles Angels in 1961, the first time they were called the LA Angels. And Lou Gehrig of the Yankees in 1932. They were 116-4 all time before last night. Teams that had at least 8 RBIs from a guy.
Yeah. Last night, I'll say it again. What are we playing for?
Joe's.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. You can get it tonight. Joe'sKC.com to put your order in. Send it anywhere in the country. It makes a great gift. Listen, if you're in sales, I think sending a client a great Joe's Kansas City Barbecue package would be as good as it gets. You want to be a hero? Get them some Joes. You can get your Joes at 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, 117th and Row. Listen, everybody famous who comes to town goes to Joes. Why aren't you going to Joe's? Get your Joe's to goes tonight at joeskc.com. And don't forget about my guys at the Kansas City Barbecue Store. Still love that Traeger grill. It's where I got my last two grills. It's where I'll buy my next two grills. It's the Kansas City Barbecue Store right across the parking lot from Joe's in Olathe. Dan and the staff are absolutely fantastic. Grills, sauces, rubs, utensils, know-how. The meats, even. They got great selection of meat. It's where all the competition barbecue teams go. Go see them at the Kansas City Barbecue Store.
One more fun stat from that. Before last night, teams that had a player drive in exactly 8 runs had won 29 straight and 70 of 71 over the last 52 years.
It's tough to lose. It's tough to blow a game or a guy drives in 8 for you, but it happened. But I will say again, I hope the Royals can figure out something to get on. I think for small markets, battling and having half your games not on TV, I think it's a problem, right? And I think we saw the most memorable game so far of Bobby Witt Jr.'s career, and it was already on the West Coast, which probably cut down on a lot of folks, went extra innings, but a big chunk of your potential fan base couldn't see it at all as a problem. So hopefully they get that figured out soon. Bobby Witt Jr., I think, started to become a national star last night too, because the highlights on SportsCenter, it was Trout striking out, it was Ohtani having a monster night, and it was Bobby Witt Jr. having a monster night. Not too bad and to Mike, have that kind of company.
And Mike Trout chasing that second home run.
Yes.
He's in the shot. That's important.
Yes, no doubt. No doubt. All right, leave you with a little nugget about the NBA. I'm going to be headed out of town. So, first of all, the Pistons traded Jerami Grant to the Blazers. You got to love the NBA. For a 25 first-round pick. Love that 25 draft class. A 25 first-round pick. They also swap 22 second-round picks. Detroit moves up. So they move Grant, they get a 25 first round pick, and they move up 10 spots in the second round with Portland. You know, there's a protection to it, 1 through 4. It won't transfer, all those kind of things. You know, it now opens up $43 million for the Detroit Pistons. So they look for the future pick, and they get cap room to go sign a free agent. I guess you got to be a real techno nerd, but I love that. I love tracking the salary caps and the money and the picks and everything that goes into it. I think the NBA draft is fun because of that. Of course, you don't know where a guy's going till sometimes 20 minutes later, sometimes 20 days later. But the NBA draft tomorrow, one of my absolute favorite shows and looking forward to it. Who would you go with number one?
I would go with Banchero.
I think he's the safest pick. I think I'd probably go safe in this, but Chet Holmgren could be the unicorn out of the whole mix. That's going to do it for us. Back at it tomorrow at 2:00.